Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, October 22nd, 2012. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Idaho Secretary of State sues education voters of Idaho over Proposition 1, 2, and 3 donation disclosure. Megalo to travel up U.S. Highway 12 tonight. It's unknown who owns it. And local candidates speak about merit pay and paramedics at AARP Forum. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Idaho Secretary of State Ben Assersa filed a lawsuit in 4th District Court in Ada County today to find out the names of donors of $200,000 to the group Education Voters of Idaho, which had collected the money to be used for TV ads in favor of Propositions 1, 2, and 3. The Secretary of State's office also sent letters today to three other groups demanding disclosure of campaign contributions. Two of those groups, the Idaho Education Association and the National Education Association, are already known to have contributed money to opposing Propositions 1, 2, and 3. A yes vote on the propositions would uphold Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna's education overhaul laws passed last year. Education Voters of Idaho co-founders John Foster and Debbie Field have said they don't have to disclose the names of the donors because of the group's status as a 501c4 nonprofit. Assersa maintains that failure to disclose violates Idaho's Sunshine Law. The Secretary of State told the Spokesman Review website today the voters made it clear when they passed the Sunshine Initiative that public disclosure is an essential element of Idaho elections. These citizens want to know where the money comes from and how it's spent. That's been the policy and the law of this state for 38 years. My job is to enforce the law. Education Voters of Idaho attorney Christ Troupas said Friday the group would refund the $200,000, but Assersa told the Spokesman Review the money has been received and the money has already been spent. It's hard to undo that. After the University of Idaho Vandals football team lost the 7th out of 8 games they've played so far this season, University of Idaho Athletic Director Bob Speer announced yesterday that coach Rob Akey has been dismissed. First-year offensive coordinator Jason Gesser was named interim coach. Akey was set to earn a salary of $375,000 this year based on a contract extension signed after he led the team to a 2009 Humanitarian Bowl victory. The buyout of his contract means he will be paid his base salary of $166,000 per year until December 2014, unless he is hired as coach for another college. College Street in Moscow was open to traffic Friday afternoon after construction in the area was completed. Moscow Assistant City Engineer Scott Bontrager told the Moscow City Council's Public Works Committee this afternoon the construction took 4 months and extended over a quarter-mile section of College Street.
The underground utilities, which took a large portion of the construction time, was completed. We moved on to building of the sidewalks and paving. You see here some of the pictures. We have 9-foot wide sidewalks, and then we have the 6-foot wide furniture zone throughout the project. And then the roadway section itself has two 12-foot drive lanes. We have 5-foot bike lanes on both sides, and then 8-foot parking lanes. And to help maintain reduced speeds through the corridor and to provide kind of a tighter street feel and more boulevard type feel, we provided bump outs throughout the project in creating the new intersection. This project also contains certain amenities required for this zoned area. We added street trees throughout at 30-foot intervals. We have historical style lighting at 60-foot intervals along the project, with LED heads only using 70 watts for the lighting, whereas a typical high-pressure sodium or such may use 250 watt So we have much, much more lighting, a lot better type of lighting out there using a lot less power. And also included in this project were stormwater filters that we have in each of the four quarters. And these type of filters themselves are considered enhanced treatment, so it removes most of the pollutants that we have in our stormwater for almost 100% of the project.
And there's how many of those?
Four of them.
And what price per each?
About $15,000 each installed.
15?
Mm-hmm.
And that was Moscow Assistant City Engineer Scott Bonträger speaking to the Moscow City Council's Public Works Committee this afternoon about recently completed construction on College Street. More than 500 University of Idaho students came out to volunteer throughout the community Saturday morning as part of the university's annual Make a Difference Day. Crews of students did cleanup and other service projects at 20 sites, including the Idaho Food Bank, the Moscow Public Library, the Salvation Army. Student coordinator Laura Exley told the Daily News positive feedback from all sides has kept the program going every year since 2000. Pullman-based electronics manufacturer Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories announced plans Friday to more than double the size of its plant near Lewiston, making space to create up to 750 new jobs. A spokesperson for the company said demand for Schweitzer products has caused the company to bump up its construction schedule and break ground in November rather than in 2014 as originally planned. The expansion will add 140,000 square feet to the 105,800 square foot facility constructed in 2011 that currently houses 150 employees. The facility is located on a 25-acre site in the Port of Lewiston's Business and Technology Park. Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter has written to Interior Secretary Ken Salazar asking why the Bureau of Land Management did not use a route preferred by Idaho groups when the agency released its proposed route for the Gateway West Transmission Line. The power line will stretch from Glen Rock, Wyoming to Murphy, Idaho, southwest of Boise. Otter's letter accuses the BLM of having, quote, disregarded collaborative efforts and selected preferred alternative routes that do not have the support of the state, local communities, or state and local staff. The Idaho proposal sent the route through the Morley Nelson Birds of Prey Conservation Area south of Kuna, but the BLM chose a route that passes through private land because the law establishing the conservation area stipulates any projects within its boundaries must improve raptor habitat, and a power transmission line does not do that. Citizens, farmers, and government officials have expressed opposition to having the line go through private land. The BLM is expected to finish its environmental impact statement later this year and is taking public comment now. BLM comment information can be found by searching on the web for Gateway West Transmission Line BLM comment. The incumbent Republican candidate for Idaho Legislative Seat 2A clarified an earlier statement and said he meant it when he said when he told Christian parents they should keep their children out of Idaho's, quote, godless schools. Representative Vito Barbieri of Dalton Gardens, who is seeking his second term in the legislature, defended the statement during a televised debate with Democratic challenger Cheryl Stransky, and posted a statement to that effect on his website. Barbieri calls for a state tax credit that would support private schools. Stransky spoke against any sort of funding for private schools by the state, saying that public education is a great equalizer and needs to be kept open. At Friday's AARP Candidates Forum at the University Inn in Moscow, Republican State Representative Tom Trail of Moscow, who is leaving the legislature this year, asked the legislative candidates how they would feel about merit pay for state lawmakers. We have answers from Democrat Paulette Jordan of Plummer and her opponent Republican Cindy Agidius of Moscow, followed by Republican Senate candidate Gresham Bauma of Troy and Democratic incumbent Senator Dan Schmidt of Moscow. Here's Paulette Jordan.
You know, in fact, I've actually committed and I'm putting out a challenge for all legislators to commit their first year towards education. And that is one way to lead by example. That is also one way to wake up your constituent base so that they could see the fact that our legislators truly care not only about the people and our families, but about our children, which is our greatest investment in the state. So you'll see me firsthand doing that by example. I'm going to commit my first year's salary. And second year, if I need to, if folks will agree upon it, but I'm putting that challenge out there.
Thank you, Paulette. Anybody else? Cindy.
Cindy Agidius.
Well, I was just going to say the same thing Shirley did, but she beat me to it. So you're right. It's an election every 2 years, and I do believe that each candidate has got to commit themselves and really jump in there. Mine will be about economic development, because without the economic development, we won't be able to fund education, and that is my biggest concern right now.
Thank you, Cindy. Gresham.
Gresham Bauma.
Yeah, I believe in keeping things simple as much as possible, so trying to link salaries with economic performance would be very challenging at the least. I believe that you guys are going to hold us accountable for how we manage the economy, especially this time around. And so I'm eager to have the opportunity to apply principles that I believe produce economic growth and prosperity and have been proven so in our history.
Thank you. Dan?
Dan Schmidt.
Thank you for the question, Tom. The linking pay for performance, it sounds like, as my opponent agrees, it's a difficult thing to do to motivate people. But think about our legislators in the State House now. I think they're currently pretty motivated to pass bills because that's what their perception is what gets things done. 400 bills passed this last year in the conservative Idaho legislature. And I think that's the perception of pay for performance. So it's very important what you count, what you think is important, and how you motivate people. And most people, I think, sitting before you here, aren't going to be motivated by pay. I'm not sure teachers are motivated by pay either. And so the idea that we're going to get better performance by paying more, be careful.
That was Democratic State Senator Dan Schmidt of Moscow, who is running for his second term in the Senate. Speaking at the AARP Candidates Forum Friday, Schmidt was preceded by his Republican opponent Gresham Bauma, and before him we heard Republican House candidate Cindy Agidius, and we started with Agidius's Democratic opponent Paulette Jordan. At Friday's AARP Candidates Forum at the University in Best Western in Moscow, the candidates in the contested Latah County Commissioner race were asked about how they would change the operations of paramedic services in Latah County. We'll hear first from Democrat Stephen Cook, followed by Republican Richard Walzer.
There isn't a right answer, and I don't have a one-size-fits-all solution, but I want to keep talking to the stakeholders and to the citizens and try to solve this problem so that we have paramedics in the county when they're needed. There's two problems, really. Problem number one is the paramedics themselves. Problem number two is what is the process by which you go about solving this problem? Because currently there's no overarching structure that looks at the emergency medical service within Latah County. Local units have some responsibility, city government has some responsibility, and the county has some responsibility. So it's the responsibility of the county to look after this problem, and in my view, there isn't currently a structure in place to do that.
The future Board of Commissioners will probably be taking this up at some time, at which point I think it's important to get as much information from as many people as you can. Certainly the EMS personnel, EMT volunteers should be front and center on this. But anybody that needs a comment and has knowledge in this area should be, the advice should be sought out. The commissioners would need to conduct open and public hearings. Then from that, hopefully, would come a discussion where some conclusions and some suggestions can be drawn. This idea of one person thinking they know best versus everybody else, going in with guns blazing, shooting first, asking questions later. Dr. Cook he may be retired from teaching, but he can still teach. He's given us a tutorial on what not to do. There's been a lot of upset. These people that are our volunteers, they're the best among us. They donate their time, some put in their own money, and they should not have had to go through this.
That was Republican candidate for Latah County Commissioner Richard Walzer, preceded by his Democratic opponent, Stephen Cook. The two are running for the commission seat being vacated by Democrat Jennifer Barrett, who is not running for re-election. The winner will serve a two-year term. The other commissioner candidate this year is incumbent Republican Dave McGraw, who is running unopposed and is expected to serve a four-year term. The winners this year will join Democrat Tom Stroshine on the commission. Stroshine has 2 years left remaining in his four-year term. The city of Moscow has announced part of Paradise Path running through the city will be closed today through Friday because of work by Avista Utilities. The section that will be closed is located in Berman Creekside Park and parallel to Steiner Avenue. Avista is working to connect power lines to the Moscow substation and upgrade power poles. Another short Paradise Path closure is possible east of Moscow towards Mill Road during the week as the utility upgrades its power system. A megaload is scheduled to leave the port of Wilma tonight and enter Idaho on Highway 128 and then travel along U.S. Highway 12 between Lewiston and the Montana state line. The permit goes to Hauler Omega Morgan Incorporated to haul a water purification unit for an unnamed company. The load will be 20 feet wide, meaning it will take up two lanes of the mostly two-lane Highway 12. It is 300 feet long and 22 feet high and weighs 520,000 pounds. The load is expected to travel four nights, starting tonight between 10 p.m. and 5:30 a.m. only in Idaho after entering Idaho from the port of Wilma in Washington. The ITD press release says three flagging teams, three pilot vehicles, and two vehicles with portable signs will travel with the shipment. The transportation plan requires that delays not exceed 15 minutes or other vehicles using Highway 12. Locations have been identified along US 12 where the shipment can safely pull over to let traffic pass. I spoke to Helen Yost of the Moscow group Wild Idaho Rising Tide today. Wild Idaho Rising Tide has been opposed to ExxonMobil megaload shipments and other megaloads traveling on Idaho highways. Here's Helen Yost.
It's still unclear from Idaho Transportation Department press release, and also Kim Brigham of the Missoulian has been trying to hunt down more news mostly on the destination as well as the owner of this particular megaload. We've heard through the grapevine that it is heading to northern Alberta, so it is a tar sands module as best as we can tell, especially because it's a water treatment vessel that, you know, would likely use to clean up the dirty tailings water that tar sands produces, which is a lot. Also what's significant about it is that it's another huge megaload heading through our Wild and Scenic River Corridor and through the largest wildlands complex in the lower 48 states. Whether companies should be able to haul large loads like that through wild places like that is actually subject of a federal court case right now brought forth by Idaho Rivers United, and that has not been resolved. They're challenging the Forest Service and the Federal Highway Administration for negligence in not holding up various designations along Highway 12, its Wild and Scenic River Corridor easement, as well as its designations as a scenic byway and All-American Road. There's one more significant aspect to this megaload, and that is that it's the longest that's ever gone up Highway 12, 300 feet. The ConocoPhillips drums, although higher and wider, were only about 225 feet long. We suspect that this load could become wedged between rock cliffs and guardrails hanging over precipitous drops to the Locksaw and Middle Fork Clearwater rivers on very tight, narrow curves on Highway 12.
And it's been a while since a megaload has gone up U.S. Highway 12, but I assume the same arguments about that apply about damage to Idaho's highway infrastructure and the possibility of emergency vehicles not getting through because it is two lanes wide on a mostly two-lane highway, although an I believe an ambulance is going to be accompanying this load, right?
Yes, one ambulance is going along, as well as plenty of flagger crews, pilot trucks, and trucks carrying signs to let people know how to maneuver. We understand that Idaho State Police are also going to be escorting this load, although we're not sure for how much of the journey.
Same arguments apply then.
All the same arguments that were held up by Idaho residents against both ExxonMobil and the ConocoPhillips loads, and actually a third case was attempted by Friends of the Clearwater against the Weyerhaeuser loads, that 23 of those made it through. Apparently that served as an open invitation for other companies that want to haul huge loads that they can't fit under overpasses or on other highways.
23 Weyerhaeuser loads made it up U.S. Highway 12?
Yeah, that was last September through, I believe, November. Apparently, according to Linwood Lahey, one of the main litigants against ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips loads, only about 8 or 9 of those qualified as true, you know, huge megaloads, and some of them were even only one lane wide of those 23. There's going to be plenty of damage, and we're sort of appalled in that we've heard, although we haven't followed it, on national news coverage that they moved one of the space shuttles with great care. It moved very slowly. They put down special metal pads and such to take it, I guess, across some part around L.A., and yet they can just rampage up Idaho roads with impunity, it seems, and cost our transportation department and us taxpayers plenty of money, not only for road maintenance after they damage our roads, but also administrative costs, issue permits, and do studies to see whether these loads will actually make it.
What's the situation in Montana as far as using Montana's road system? I know the Montana legal system was sort of at an impasse and had blocked the ExxonMobil tar sands megaloads, but what's going on with these other ones?
Well, we haven't followed up on it, although there's been several, at least local articles. It doesn't seem to be a regional issue or national issue at this point. There's been articles in the Billings and Bozeman papers about 29 modules manufactured for some tar sands operation up in Alberta that have been moving, it appears, at about 3 or maybe 4 a week out of the Billings plant, which actually hired 279 people to build these loads, so people there love it. But they've been moving since the beginning of October, and we hope to take some kind of action, although, you know, we haven't organized that yet, probably with Missoula activists.
But what is the legal status? Because the ExxonMobil loads were essentially blocked until ExxonMobil decided they were no longer going to pursue travel permits for them. Why are these going through? Is it because they're using different roads than ExxonMobil was proposing to use, or what?
That's likely it. And just like the case on Highway 12, brought by Idaho Rivers United, you know, it might just be a specific company-focused court case. And so, you know, they expelled ExxonMobil and their entire plan as being not thoroughly enough reviewed for environmental and other damages. But then somehow other, you know, I guess it's up to the citizens to contest every single case that comes forward, every company that has a proposal to move loads. What I know of Eastern Montana roads, and I've been on them plenty, is that they're just as poor quality as Idaho roads, and they stand to be just as vulnerable to abuse by large vehicles as well. So,
what's Wild Idaho Rising Tide doing tonight?
Well, we are heading out to do both protesting and monitoring of the large 300-foot-long, half-a-million-pound water treatment vessel that's coming out of the Port of Wilma. We hope to greet it down on Idaho Highway 128 as it comes into Idaho, just west of Lewiston, and then monitor it to its stopping point near Orofino tonight. We also plan monitoring operations on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night. That's if the weather holds. Each of those nights, it will be stopping in Kuski, about 25 miles east of Lowell, and then finally just before the Montana state line. There will be a second protest on Wednesday night at about 10 p.m. somewhere in the vicinity of Syringa, Idaho. where this large low will pass into the Wild and Scenic River Corridor.
That was Helen Yost of the Moscow Group Wild Idaho Rising Tide, who has been opposing the transport of megalodes on Idaho highways, talking about tonight's 520,000-pound, 300-foot-long load being hauled by the company Omega Morgan Incorporated on U.S. Highway 12 towards Montana. Several Montana landowners who ordinarily allow hunters access to their land are dropping out of the state-managed hunter access program in protest of the state's willingness to relocate bison outside of Yellowstone National Park. Ranchers fear wild bison, who can carry a disease called brucellosis, might transmit that disease to cattle. The disease can cause cows to abort their calves, although there are no documented cases of bison having passed brucellosis to cows. In March, the Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks transferred 64 disease-free Yellowstone bison to the Fort Peck Reservation. Retired rancher Rich Suddeth from the Hinsdale area said ranchers are declining to participate in the state program, which pays them for allowing hunter access, in hopes that fewer hunters will buy high-dollar licenses, impacting state revenue for the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. About 50 of 1,300 landowners have opted out, leaving 8 million acres still available for hunting. Stevens County Sheriff deputies shot and killed a man in the southern part of the county in northeastern Washington state after responding to a call from a suicidal man Friday night. Stevens County Prosecutor Tim Rasmussen said a search warrant was executed at the residence. A single shot was fired after deputies entered the house on Deer Creek Road, and the man was pronounced dead when emergency crews arrived at the scene. Standard procedure requires deputies involved be placed on administrative leave until after an investigation by the multi-agency Spokane Investigative Regional Response Team. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. Looks like 100% chance of rain showers before midnight, then scattered rain and snow showers. Snow level 3,800 feet. Lowering to 2,800 feet tonight. Wind gusts from the west up to 20, and little or no snow accumulation expected. 20% chance of isolated showers at tomorrow afternoon. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, high 45. Currently 39 degrees and overcast. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Go to the website. I'm Lee Robartis. Nancy Casey and Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. We'll be back tomorrow night at 5:30. Have a pleasant evening. Coming up, Eat the Airwaves, news and opinions from the west side, flashpoints around 6:35, and Wild Idaho Rising Tide presents Climate Justice Forum at around 7:30. KRFP Moscow. Have a good night.